The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome to a Friday. Friday's always good, right? And hopefully today will be a good day. Already it is. It's a little better than it was yesterday because we got some news from John McCain. John McCain is a no vote. A no vote on Graham Cassidy. Here's some of the statement that he released. As I have repeatedly stressed, healthcare reform legislation ought to be the product of regular order in the Senate. Committees of jurisdiction should mark up legislation with input from all committee members and send their bill to the floor for debate and amendment. That is the only way we might achieve bipartisan consensus on lasting reform, without which a policy that affects one-fifth of our economy and every single American family will be subject to reversal with every change of administration and congressional majority. Good point. He continues, I cannot in good conscience vote for the Graham Cassidy proposal. I believe we could do better working together, Republicans and Democrats, and have not yet really tried. I take no pleasure in announcing my opposition. Far from it. The bill's authors are my dear friends. Yes, Lindsay certainly is. And I think the world of them. I know they are acting consistently with their beliefs and sense of what is best for the country. So am I. And with that, John McCain said he is a no vote on McCain, Cassidy. So that's good news, but really, we're not out of the woods just yet. Lisa Murkowski has still not said where she stands. Susan Collins said she's leaning no, but has not come out and said she's a hard no. The only one who has is Rand Paul. And seriously, you're going to trust Rand Paul? I'm not. I'm not at all. I don't trust him for a moment. So there you go. But John McCain, this is a good sign. And Politico has an article saying they don't even know if there are the votes to open debate, you know, the motion to proceed, that they don't even know if Mitch McConnell has the votes to open debate on the bill. Again, it's not really a time to celebrate, though. The deadline for this bill to pass right now is September 30th. That's if they want to do it through reconciliation. And I believe that's just for this year. It might be for this session of Congress, in which case we'd be in better shape. But it might just be for the year. They might be able to reintroduce it next year. But we don't know for sure. I don't know for sure is what I should say. Either way, you know they're not done with trying to kill our health care. So keep up those phone calls to your senators, especially if you're in Alaska, call Lisa Murkowski's office. If you're in Maine, call Susan Collins' office. I don't know if you heard this the other night. This is how Stephen Colbert, you know, Stephen Colbert does a cold open for his show now. And it's hit or miss. Sometimes it's hysterically funny. Sometimes it just totally misses. And sometimes, like this one, I think, well, that could have been funny if only it didn't hit so close to home.
Republican senators are pushing for a new health care bill to be passed by next week.
The Republican effort to replace Obamacare comes back to life.
Last spring, Republicans brought you Night of the Living Bill. Now get ready for the horrifying, terrifying sequel, Dawn of the Bill. We thought our healthcare nightmare was over with the death of the American Healthcare Act, but the dead have returned.
It gets up and kills.
Dawn of the Bill. Starring Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and Mitch McConnell of Kiltucky. Dawn of the Bill. It just won't die. But there's a good chance you will.
Yeah.
Dawn of the Bill. Rated R for Really This Thing Again?
Really This Thing Again. And watch out again and again and again. See what I mean? It could have been funny. If only for the fact that there's too much truth there. So it ain't over till it's over. I'll rest a lot easier a week from tomorrow. That would be the 30th. Now, on Monday night, I don't know if you saw this, but CNN has announced a debate. They're going to have a debate with Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy facing off against... Bernie Sanders and Amy Klobuchar over healthcare. Now, you know, I love Bernie Sanders. I think he should be president. I do, and I'm going to piss off some people by saying this, I wish he had waited on his single payer, on introducing his single payer bill until after September 30th, because it's like the boogeyman. You know, people are just now saying, like Lindsey Graham is saying, either we do this and we kill this now, or the alternative is socialized medicine, Medicare for all. Now, I think we could use a bit of socialized medicine in this country. That would be a good thing. But the timing is off to give them any kind of opening at all. This is what they do, right? So, once again, I'm shaking because myself and millions of others are at risk now of not being able to purchase health insurance, certainly not in any affordable manner. There's a new study from AARP. Check this out. And yes, I'm now an older person. I will be, oh my God, I'll be 58 on November 4th. So I classify as older, but not old enough for Medicare. I'm in that twilight zone thing where I'm old, but I'm not quite old enough yet. And so AARP, this new study, finds that older people could pay as much as $16,174 more per year for health coverage under this Graham-Cassidy bill. Believe it or not, the bill threatens to make healthcare unaffordable and inaccessible for millions of older Americans. This, according to AARP, which opposes the measure. They write this in the report. Here's the deal. The study finds that on average nationwide, a 60-year-old making $25,000 a year would have to pay as much as $16,174 more per year for health insurance. That's somebody making $25,000 a year would have to pay over $16,000 a year more than they're already paying. What does that tell you? This is a result of the possible elimination of two kinds of Obamacare subsidies, which help people afford their premiums and out-of-pocket costs. The bill also gives states leeway on how they'd spend a new block grant under the bill. So it's possible that some states could keep some of the subsidy funding, which would lessen the increase in costs, but I wouldn't count on it. Maybe if you're in a state with a Democratic governor, but, you know, I live in Florida, and more states are under Republican control these days than are under Democratic control. What else? Oh, now this is mind-boggling. So Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, neither of which have said where they stand. Susan Collins, again, this morning on one of the morning shows, said she's leaning towards no, but hasn't said firmly no. Lisa Murkowski is not giving us any clue. The study singles out certain states as having even higher potential cost increases than the national average. In particular, AARP points to Alaska, home to Lisa Murkowski, right? A 60-year-old making $25,000 a year in Alaska would have to pay as much as $31,790 more per year. More than that person makes, more than they're on top of what they're already paying. In Arizona, by the way, that same person making $25,000 a year would have to pay $22,000 more, according to this AARP study. This, in the understatement of the year, AARP says this increase is simply unaffordable. You think? Oh, man. So we had, Jimmy Kimmel for the third night in a row last night, giving out more facts than certainly I saw on any evening news program. Not that I watch them all, but I do try to watch some. Late night really got in on it. Seth Meyers, he told this story of the Thelma and Louise analogy. Perhaps you heard it.
So the bill takes money away from vulnerable people on Medicaid and strips away protections for people with pre-existing conditions. Now, you might think, how could any senator vote for such a monstrous bill? Well, the answer is they either don't know or don't care. The website Vox interviewed GOP senators and asked them basic questions about the bill, and their answers were baffling. Take, for example, this exchange with Kansas Senator Pat Roberts. Reporter, why does this make things better? What is this doing? Roberts, look, we're in the backseat of a convertible being driven by Thelma and Louise. And we're headed toward the canyon. That's a movie that you've probably never seen. Reporter, I do know Thelma and Louise, sir. Roberts, so we have to get out of the car, and you have to have a car to get into, and this is the only car there is.
Yeah. So that's the thinking of so many of these Republicans is, well, this is our last chance, our last hope to kill Obamacare. So, it doesn't matter that the bill sucks. Doesn't matter that it would throw 20 some odd million people off of their insurance plans. And I can't even give you a hard number because there's no CBO score, and there will not be one before the bill comes to a vote, if it does come to a vote, because there's not enough time. I don't often agree with John McCain, but I do here. Regular order. You know, if there were a debate, as they did with the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, as I don't like calling it, there was debate for over a year. They wrote the bill in three separate committees. They debated it. There were amendments. The Republicans had input. They put amendments in that they voted for, only to vote against it in the final go round. When they talk about that Obamacare wasn't bipartisan, that's a technicality. It's essentially a lie, because the Republicans did have input in all the committees, in all the markups. They did have amendments, and they did get to vote on those amendments. And there were some. Susan Collins voted for some. Her old colleague in Maine, who's not there anymore, Olympia Snowe, very famously voted for some. And then when it came down to the final bill, she voted against it. But that's just plain dirty pool, which they tend to do. So the people in the chat room are talking about John McCain to the rescue, but not yet. There's still, look, again, Rand Paul says he's a hard no. I don't trust Rand Paul to be our savior ever. I do trust John McCain. If he says he's a hard no, he's a no. But we still haven't heard a definite no from Susan Collins. We haven't heard anything from Lisa Murkowski. And there's a bunch of others who were on the fence before. What's her name? Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia. One thing that has not really been discussed is how much money is being cut from Medicaid, not a separate and apart from the Affordable Care Act. Above and beyond the Affordable Care Act, there are massive cuts to Medicaid in this bill that nobody is really talking about. And West Virginia is going to be hurt really badly with that. So, look, I don't care who the savior is. I just want them to vote this thing down. So there's a group called Community Catalyst Action that's running radio ads in some key states, including Alaska. And here's the ad they're running in Alaska.
There's an old saying, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing again and again and expecting different results. Well, That's what congressional leaders are doing right now, pushing another bad health care bill and trying to force our Senator, Lisa Murkowski, to support it. They can call it something different, but it's just more of the same. It still slaps an age tax on older Americans, forcing you to pay more just because you're over 50. Still raises your prices for insurance premiums and prescriptions. Still cuts Medicaid, takes coverage away from seniors in nursing homes, kids with disabilities, people in treatment for addiction, and the opioid crisis. And yes, it's still opposed by doctors, nurses, and cancer groups across the country. Senator Murkowski has made the right choice before. Urge her to do it again, because just one vote could stop this bill. Call Senator Murkowski and tell her to vote no on this bad health care bill. Paid for by Community Catalyst Action Fund.
And so they're running that ad, obviously, with the specific senators for each state in a number of states. They dropped a good bunch of money on it. So 202-224-3121, that is the Senate switchboard. You can tell them what senator you want, or if you don't, I know if you're listening to the show, you know who your senators are. But if you don't know, tell them what state you're in, and they'll tell you who your senators are, and they'll connect you to their office. Now is the time to double down, not to let up. I'm thinking that the Republicans are thinking that some, you know, on the left might just give up once they think that the pressure is off. The pressure is not off. They still have a week to get this together. And again, the only firm no's are John McCain, who I do trust in this instance, and Rand Paul, who I don't trust for a second. So don't let our fortunes, our futures rest on Rand Paul, please. All right, let's find out what's going on in the world and check in with Talk Media News. Is Doug Christian on the line?
Sure is. How are you doing today?
I'm feeling a little better, though not quite relieved yet. I won't be relieved until a week from tomorrow, and then only for a short while, because they could always bring this thing back again.
Yes, it's like a vampire. It just will not die.
That is very true. And the Republicans will not give up in trying to take our health care away from us.
No, that's exactly right. Of course, what they are is they're appealing to not the voters, but the donors. And the donor base is all about the money. It has nothing to do with health care. It has everything to do with saving certain interests a lot of money, which means throwing people with pre-existing conditions out of the marketplace.
That's very true. You know, the thing that's weird is, though, the lobby group for the American Health Insurance Plans, AHIP, came out strongly against it. You would think they'd be in favor of it. They don't like this bill. There's not one single, like, legit medical group either, from the American Cancer Society to the American Medical Association, and on down the list, that is in favor of it. It's across the board being routed.
That's right. This is not about health care. This is about money. It has nothing to do with it. It has everything to do with destroying health care and satisfying a few very big donors who, and of course it gets back to why is so much power locked in with so few people. And it really, maybe at another time after we, you know, can get through this, I hope we can get through this without this bill passing. As you said, it's not assured yet.
Nope.
We got to be very careful. We cannot get to sigh of relief quite yet.
No, we can't. Do you know, and because I don't have the answer, I know that the reason the deadline is September 30th is that's the end of the fiscal year. And if they want to do this through budget reconciliation, they only have until September 30th. Now, I don't know if this means they can bring it up again next year or if they'd have to wait until the next Congress to do it.
That I don't know the answer to.
Yeah, I don't either.
Know that they are, that there are these there are arcane parliamentary rules that even senators don't know. I mean, this is something that there are people who are just experts in knowing, you know, what rule will apply when.
The Senate parliamentarian, and there are some, I've read some articles that say there might be some things in Graham Cassidy that don't work under reconciliation, and the parliamentarian might rule that it's ineligible. But again, I don't want to put my eggs in that basket either.
Yeah, you're right. That's right. And you just don't know. I mean, we're living in such strange times right now. That any kind of thinking, okay, well, this would break tradition. Nobody's going to do that. Well, we've seen that's not true.
Right.
Anything could happen.
That's right. So what else is happening? Any more the back and forth between Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump since this morning?
Well, of course, there has been a little bit. And beyond that, hold on one second. This thing is Washington D.C. for you. Yeah, there we go. One thing is that this kind of war of words. Most normal people would say, "Oh, these are just war of words." But the trouble is that both these characters take this stuff personally, and now Kim Jong-un has threatened to actually. Test an explosion in the Pacific, in the atmosphere, a hydrogen bomb.
Right.
This is this ratchets up the whole tit for tat, the schoolyard name calling to a whole new level.
Yeah, it does.
And so we're living in a very dangerous time. Because, I mean, both of these people have very thin skin.
Yeah.
And
they both have the mental capacity of a fourth grader, it seems. There are two little kids, you know, calling each other names and seeing who can be meaner than the other one, yet they're both sitting on nuclear weapons.
It's just amazing. I mean, it also at a certain point, I mean, we've got to really ask ourselves whether any president should have the sole authority to drop a nuclear bomb.
Well, and there's legislation. Well, there's a petition going around by Congressman Ted Lieu, and I forget. I think he's working with a senator as well. They're trying to get legislation passed because a president can unilaterally. Launch a nuclear weapon. The president alone can give the go-ahead and do it.
That's right. And he has the legal authority to do it. The question is, if in an erratic state he asked for such a thing, would the generals abide, which they're legally obligated to do, or would they disobey?
And if they disobey, then it's a military coup, which is not a good
right.
thing either. So, you know, it's a lose-lose situation. Either way, we're screwed.
That's exactly right. I mean, there's so many questions about this administration, about this president. And, of course, I mean, there's the whole Facebook Russia thing that we haven't touched on yet.
Yes.
And
Trump is calling that a hoax, yet Mark Zuckerberg says he's turned over or turning over 3,000 ads, and they found some close to 500 phony accounts. So it looks like Facebook did an about-face and is admitting that this really happened. And Trump's reaction is, oh, it's that Russia hoax thing. It's not real.
Well, Facebook really would have no choice, because I am sure that members of Congress behind the scenes went to Facebook and said, look, we are going to call your people in as witnesses. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the to testify, and one of the great things about testifying before Congress is that it is against the law to lie to Congress.
Right. Whether you're under oath or not, it's against the law.
Exactly. So, I mean, I look at these invitations to testify not as finding information, because Bob Mueller does that. but as a way, as an opportunity for Congress to help these people to perjure themselves or to lie to Congress. That's the reason that people are testifying before Congress, so that they can show their true colors, and then they can use the
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that Facebook was basically said, "Hey, listen, you better start working with us. Stop denying this, or we're gonna make it tough for you."
Well, yeah. Well, and now they're cooperating.
Yeah, and thank goodness for it. I mean, this was an attack upon the United States, our sovereignty. I mean, the word sovereignty was brought up by President Trump over 20 times during his UN speech.
But he doesn't seem to know the meaning of it.
No, especially when it comes to Russia. And, I mean, it's deeply ironic. And seriously, I mean, from what I gather from people in the hall, in the halls, they were just these murmurs of like, oh, I cannot believe I'm listening to the president of the United States acting like this.
We've got we've got over 3 years left of it.
Oh,
I know.
Well, Bob Mueller is working at a ferocious speed. I mean, this guy is not treating this as a white collar crime. He's treating it like he did the Don Gotti. He is going after the characters with such ferocity that it, for instance, when he ordered the raid on Paul Manafort, it wasn't just that he had a search warrant to go into the home. He had an additional search warrant to actually break into the home to pick their locks, and above that.
And when the agent
confronted Paul Manafort, what they did was they searched her for a gun to make sure that she wasn't armed.
Wow.
They treated it like these
Paul Manafort, it sounds like Paul Manafort is going down, but that, you know, we don't know if it how it touches Trump or not. I still think unless something unforeseen happens, and anything at this point could happen. I mean, anything. You know, we've still got him for more than 3 more years, and it just seems unfathomable to me. Anyway, Doug Christian, I got to run. Doug Christian from the Talk Media News Service at talkmedianews.com. As always, thank you.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
Have a great weekend. You too. Talk to you next week. Bye bye. All right, we've got Kelly Carlin coming up, so let's take a quick break. We'll do What's News and come back with Kelly Carlin. Yes, George Carlin's daughter, who is going to help us get through these stressful times. Well, she'll explain next. It's the Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. I read the news
today, oh boy. It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Kim Jong-un has responded to Donald Trump's threats to destroy North Korea and his juvenile description of Kim as Rocket Man on a suicide mission with equally bombastic rhetoric. In a statement carried by the state news agency, Kim called the U.S. president's speech mentally deranged behavior and said that Trump is, quote, unfit to hold the prerogative of supreme command of a country. He added that Trump was a, quote, rogue and a gangster fond of playing with fire, adding he would make Trump pay dearly for his speech calling for destroying the DPRK. He also called the president a dotard. A quick dictionary check shows the definition as an old person, especially one who has become weak or senile. North Korea's foreign minister says the country could test a hydrogen bomb in the Pacific as a countermeasure to Trump's threat in his UN speech. The Republican Party's latest attempt to repeal and replace Obamacare has now come under fire from the Medicaid directors of all 50 states. A statement issued by the National Association of Medicaid Directors late Thursday said the Graham-Cassidy bill, which would repeal Medicaid expansion, would place a massive burden on states and, quote, constitute the largest intergovernmental intergovernmental transfer of financial risk from the federal government to the states in our country's history. They also said the bill's requirement for states to create brand new health care programs by 2020 would not be feasible without federal funding to support such activities. Quote, any effort of this magnitude needs thorough discussion, examination, and analysis, and should not be rushed through without proper deliberation. The health care bill is expected to be put to a vote on the Senate floor next week. As we get closer to the September 30th deadline for passing this bill, late-night TV hosts are piling on with real, good information. Jimmy Kimmel spent a good part of his monologue explaining why the bill is so awful for the third night in a row.
All of these very reputable organizations, American Diabetes Association, American Medical Association, American Cancer Society, American Heart Association, the list goes on and on. All of these groups populated by doctors say this health care bill is bad. They're against it. We haven't seen this many people come forward to speak out against a bill since Cosby, okay? So they claim, as the president did, it protects people with pre-existing conditions, but it doesn't guarantee them protection. All you need to know is this. This is how the vice president himself dodged that question this morning on Fox and Friends.
You have folks like Jimmy Kimmel. They're worried about the pre-existing condition thing because right. This will be up to the governors to decide how the money's dispersed, who gets coverage. Every state will determine what's best for their folks. But with that, can you guarantee that these governors will make sure pre-existing conditions are covered?
Thomas Jefferson said, government that governs least governs best. I mean, the question that people ought to ask is, who do you think will be more responsive to the health care needs in your community? Your governor and your state legislature, or a congressman and a president in a far-off nation's capital?
Is neither an option? Because I would pick that. I'm pretty sure, by the way, I think he just told us we can't trust the president.
Seth Meyers noted that the GOP leadership killed a Lamar Alexander, Patty Murray bipartisan effort at an attempt to shore up the Obamacare markets.
Democrats and Republicans actually were getting close to a bipartisan solution that would have fixed some of the problems with Obamacare while keeping the bill largely in place. But GOP leaders decided to blow all of that up in favor of yet again another last-ditch effort to repeal and replace Obamacare.
A health care Hail Mary, the president pushing Republicans to not let this Obamacare repeal fail.
This is the Graham Cassidy bill. This really, for all intents and purposes, the final Hail Mary here for Republicans on health care.
Republicans pushing ahead with a Hail Mary plan.
This Hail Mary option.
They're referring to it as a Hail Mary, essentially.
There's the last-ditch, furious Hail Mary effort.
Of course, if this thing passes, a Hail Mary might be the only health care option some people can afford.
And Stephen Colbert explained that states that opted into Medicaid expansion would lose money, while those that didn't would be rewarded.
Now, here's how the plan works. The plan takes the money from Obamacare's Medicaid expansion that 31 states opted into about 5 years ago or something, and turns that pool into a new pool of money that gets redivided into block grants to all the states, whether they opted in 5 years ago or not. So that means states like my home state of New York loses a lot of money, while my home state of South Carolina would get a lot of money. So half of me is totally on board with this. The bill's sponsor, Lindsey Graham, explained it this way.
I like Massachusetts, I like Maryland, I like New York, I like California, but I don't like them that much to give them a bunch of money that the rest of us won't get.
CNN will air a healthcare debate Monday night between Republican Senators Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy, the sponsors of the Obamacare replacement bill, likely to be voted on next week, and Independent Senator Bernie Sanders and Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar. In the meantime, please follow Jimmy Kimmel's advice.
It's more important than ever to call your senators and tell them not to gut American healthcare, not to turn their backs on people with pre-existing conditions. Call him or her. Encourage your friends and family to call. We have until September 30th to try to dodge this bullet.
That number to call is 202-224-3121. I got the good. And that's a bit of What's News for Now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and The Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution, as our work is 100% listener supported. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then,
Just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal, and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
All right, we're back, and I'm so happy to welcome our next guest back to the show. Kelly Carlin, you know, her name gives her away as the daughter of the great George Carlin, but Kelly Carlin is much more than that. You know, Kelly, it's hard to do an intro for you because you cut across so many different roads.
I know. I call it the poly mind. I'm kind of a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything. You are. You're a, you know what? Hold on. I don't think we have sound on YouTube, and I don't want to mess up all the YouTube people.
Oh, YouTube people. Hey, YouTube people. Hello.
Yep. Hold on. I did this to them yesterday, and now, hold on, YouTube. I gotcha. One second. Okay, YouTube, we're here. I did this to the YouTube people yesterday. So Kelly Carlin, yes, we do have sound back on YouTube. What did you say? The poly mind?
I'm a poly mind. I'm just working on my own YouTube channel right now, and I'm calling it the Poly Mind Consortium. It's like, you know, it's like we all have multiple selves, and I in particular feel like I have many, many multiple selves.
Well, you do. I mean, first, of course, you're as I said, your name gives you away. You are George Carlin's daughter, and that's something I would think that you wear proudly.
Of course,
your father was amazing. You're an author. You're a writer. You are an entertainer and a performer. You host a radio show. You've produced television, and you're a Jungian depth psychology expert. You have a master's. What kind of degrees do you have? You have all kinds of degrees.
I have a master's in from Pacifica Graduate Institute in counseling psychology with an emphasis in Jungian psychology, which means that I could have gone on and gotten my MFT license here in California and seen clients. And I did for a few years. I pursued that and decided that being a therapist was not what I wanted to do because I really did want to be more public and be on stage and be able to kind of have a broader audience and to do things and say things that most therapists don't do. I'm practicing Buddhist, been practicing that for 20 years and have led lots of workshops and retreats and women's groups and things like that. You know, I am definitely a poly person.
So there you go. Now for the next time, I'll put that in my intro. She's a poly person. And now I know what it means. So the first time you had been on the show before, we met on Twitter, as people do these days.
Right.
But I got to meet you in person after reading your book, A Carlin Home Companion, Growing Up George. And then you did a limited run of some of your one woman show that was sort of a companion piece to the book, I'd say.
A little bit, yeah.
Which I loved. And it was so great to meet you. And the book was wonderful. For any fan of George Carlin, this gives us an insight to him that most people don't have, I think, because we see him through the eyes of his daughter.
Yeah, and I think it's much more than that. I worry sometimes when people talk about the book, about my dad in the book, because they think it's going to be a biography about him.
No.
And it really isn't. Mm-mm. It really is my story. And it's a perspective of a daughter, you know, and it's the father-daughter dance mostly. And I think all daughters out there can relate to that. But, you know, I wanted to write the book mostly because it's my survival story, you know. Chaotic, alcoholic, addicted family growing up, you know, a lot of codependent and enmeshment issues, and then my own codependent and addiction issues in my 20s. And then really my 30s and 40s, the book is about me trying to find my way as an independent adult, trying to find my voice as an artist, and trying to find my feet on the ground as a woman. And you know, the feedback I get mostly from the book is from people who've lived through similar things that I've lived through. It's a very universal book, actually. I mean, it's kind of like the average American story in many ways.
Well, there were, you know, we're pretty close in age, and there were, and we talked about some of the parallels growing up in the 70s. You know, I grew up in South Florida. You were in Los Angeles, but I said, had we been in the same town, we would have been friends. We would have hung
for
out.
Sure.
but then, you know, I spent many years living in LA, working in radio in Los Angeles, and getting to know some famous people. And growing up the child of a famous person puts extra pressure on one. And you know, you dealt with it as many kids of famous people did, but you came through it, certainly, to be sitting here talking with me today, obviously on the right side of it all, not without struggle.
And I feel like even these last 9 years since he's been gone, I have been figuring out my way through it. And even today I'm doing that. You know, my book came out 2 years ago. I stopped touring the show. I'm really donated my father's archives to the National Comedy Center in Jamestown, New York, which I'm very excited about. Next year, the Visitor Experience Museum is going to open. So I'm you know, and I'm 54 years old. I'm moving on from all of this. I had this very strange experience after my father's death and having to kind of step in the, not having to, but deciding to step in the spotlight, keep his legacy alive, also taking opportunities to tell my stories. I've been a storyteller for 10 years before he died. So, you know, and really finding my way and finding a stage for myself. And I'm very grateful for all the people who've supported me. But lately, you know, the last year, I've really transitioned away from being the daughter of in public. And most people really understand that and really get it. And some people hang on. I mean, I even had an exchange today on Facebook with a gentleman when I asked, you know, if you people could just, you know, refrain from mentioning my dad all the time to me. Because it's very traumatic, actually, after 9 years of losing a parent, to see their face or hear their name or have someone about them, you know, 5, 10, 20 times a day. It's a physically traumatic thing. And most people understand that. But it's an interesting time for me that I'm finding my way separate and equal and yet love my father, love his legacy. He'll always be a genius to me, but he'll also always just be my daddy.
As he should be. And that's the part that you get to keep for yourself.
Yep.
Kelly Carlin is with us. Now, this summer, you embarked on a new project. I remembered you were on, I saw you on Twitter. And by the way, you're back on Twitter now, so people can follow you at Kelly_Carlin. But you said you were getting off Twitter. You were unplugging for the summer and you were going to host a webinar. Unplugged with Kelly Carlin, and it must have gone well because you're doing another one. And in fact, yes. I got to tell you, in our chat room is Francie, who's a semi-regular. She's in the chat room a lot. And before you came on, she wrote, I did Kelly's unplugged webinar this summer. Kelly is a wonderful guide teacher, signed up for next session. So she did it once and she signed up again. It's got to be good. So tell us what this is about.
So what this is about, it's 8 weekly webinars, live webinars with me, and they're all recorded. So if you can't show up any week, that's fine. You'll get a chance to be a part of it. And I'm doing a bunch of things with it. I want to help people find meditation and mindfulness in their life to grow that muscle in their life, because it really does help with the insane chaos that we are in right now, which I know you can relate to, Nicole. You know, politics and the news cycle and the Twitter feeds and all that kind of stuff. So I introduce and I teach how to do mindfulness and meditation. We do a meditation every week together. We do about a 15 to 20 minute meditation. I also talk a lot about taking your life back from, like I said, technology, social media, the news cycle, even the needs of others, how like our codependent natures always put us at the bottom of the to-do list.
Mm-hmm.
And I really try to help people connect to their deepest dreams for their life, you know, their kind of visions for their life. And we do lots of journal prompt writing with that and kind of dig deeper into what's the story you tell yourself about your life and who you are. And then I try to help people kind of organize their week, you know, like in a way that's not so much about checking things off the to-do list, which is important, but checking the things off the to-do list while also feeding your soul, you know, like really feeding the part of you that wants to be in joy and connect to wonder and beauty. And of course, the way I like to do it, I don't do it over seriously. We have a lot of fun. We laugh. I'm irreverent.
You know.
I use language, you know. So, but Francie was so great, and thank you, Francie, for you know, touting me that way. She gets it, you know. It's a place to just kind of unplug once a week, even if you don't do any other kind of self-care or time for yourself at all during the week. I want to give you at least 90 minutes to come and do that. And you'll walk away with some real life tools that actually help. And it's a great community. You build relationships with people who are a part of it. And you feel a nature of support with community, because I think community is so important these days. And I love people who are raw beginners with this kind of stuff, who've never done anything. I love to be the person to introduce mindfulness to people.
Can you explain?
And I love it. And I love it with people who, like, have been meditating for 20 years and just need a refresh on their practice.
You know, I've been trying to do meditation. I'm one of those people who's having a really, really rough time with Trump. I mean, since November 9th, I've been in a state of constant anxiety. And so I've been attempting meditation, and I'm not one of those people who finds it easy at all. What is mindfulness? How do you explain mindfulness?
So mindfulness is the approach towards life. My words are not doing well today. Mindfulness is a practice that allows you to be wholly in the present moment. So one of the things I do during the course is I have people bring like a grape or a raisin or a Hershey's Kiss, but something small, to the webinar, and then we take our time with it. We take our time eating this thing. And so first I have them look at the shape, feel the texture. And so mindfulness connects us to our sensory experience of the world around us. It stops us from being in our head and having ideas about what we're doing to actually connecting to what we're doing. So that's what sitting meditation and walking meditation and eating meditation and any other kind of thing that mindfulness can be associated with, which is actually anything, taking a shower, washing dishes, walking through the supermarket. It's about not being in your head and being off on, you know, an adventure in your head somewhere, or your worry list, or you're mulling over the conversation you just had with your boss voice in your head.
Mm-hmm.
It's about really being present here. Like right now, you and I are speaking to each other. I have the phone up to my head. I'm feeling it pressed against my ear. I'm feeling my body, the weight of it on my chair as I talk to you. I'm hearing my voice come out of my mouth. And people think, okay, Kelly, that sounds a little like woo-woo and weird. But I have to tell you, there's nothing woo-woo about it. It's very grounded in reality. I'm not into woo-woo. But what it does is you practice mindfulness every single day, even if it's just 5 minutes while you're drinking your coffee in the morning, something begins to change in your mind and your body. And you find that you have an increased ability to detach from the Niagara Fall flow of life, and you have a sense of calmness that you normally can't get in life.
Hmm.
And it is a powerful, powerful medicine.
So then what is the difference between that and meditation?
So meditation is just doing mindfulness while you are sitting and doing nothing else. It's called sitting meditation. And while you're sitting, you are merely sitting. And part of the sitting is feeling your body sitting in the space. You focus on that. You can focus on the sounds around you, connect to the sensory experience. And then you can focus on your thoughts. And what you'll do is you will just notice them. Like imagining if you're sitting next to a river and there's a bunch of driftwood in the river or animals or whatever it is or boats. And the things, they just float by at their own pace. Normally, we're on the river and we're stuck in the river, and sometimes it's calm and sometimes it's rough and sometimes there's a waterfall coming. Mm-hmm. But when you're sitting meditation, you're imagining you're sitting on the side of the river, the bank of the river, and when the thoughts come up and you see them and go, oh, look, there goes my to-do list. Oh, look at me worrying about my meeting tomorrow at work. Oh, look at me. I'm replaying that conversation I had with my mother on the phone last night. So you're just starting to name your thoughts, and you're just noticing how active your mind is, because all of our minds are going 24/7 unconsciously. That's their job. Nothing wrong with that. But our job when we're meditating and doing mindfulness practice with it is to just notice them and let them be, and let them float by.
And just put them aside and not be judgmental over it. I get the idea. It's not as easy as it sounds.
No, it's not easy, because the first thing we think that's going to happen is, oh, I'm going to meditate, I'm finally going to have all that peace of mind I've been longing for my whole life. And the first thing we do notice, which is, you know, that is that, oh, my God, I have so many thoughts, and
yes,
they're driving me crazy.
Right.
And so this is what I teach people, and this is what I was taught. And this is, if anyone can take anything away from what I'm saying today, I want it to be this, that when we find ourselves, let's say we're doing the sitting meditation, and we find our thoughts go off, and we find ourselves suddenly in the river flow, and we find ourselves off at Disney World somewhere, or wherever our thoughts have taken us, we're in some sort of thought process, and then we go, oh, my God, I'm supposed to be sitting. I'm supposed to be focusing on my breath. Normally what we do is we beat ourselves up right away. We're like, oh, I don't know how to do this. I'm so bad at this. This isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
The real practice, though, of this, and this is where the self-care and the self-love and the rewiring occurs. The real practice is to be in that moment, and instead of beating yourself up, treat yourself as if you were a toddler learning how to walk. And imagine what you would say to a toddler when they learn to walk and they fall down. You say, oopsie, it's okay, sweetie. You're going to get this. Let's just go back to trying again. You know, or if you have a puppy who, you know, who's, you know, chewing something that's wrong, you know, yes, you know, with a puppy, you're not going to like beat them up. You're going to be like, no, we don't do this. Here's the nice thing to chew on. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want people to get mostly. That moment when you turn and you're kind to yourself, that is another way you are rewiring your own brain. And you're learning to soothe yourself in a very particular way, and that pays dividends in the end.
It obviously works. Otherwise, you know, so many people wouldn't do it. You wouldn't be having your webinar. You wouldn't be talking about it. How do you know when you're doing it correctly?
You know what? Every single time you do it, it's different. And there's no correct. There's no right and wrong. That's kind of a concept that doesn't belong in it. You're just doing it the way you're doing it that day. And some days I sit and I'm able to just go right into it and just focus on my breath and feel a sense of spaciousness. And I've been doing it for 20 years. It takes a while to get this rewired in your body. But some days, Nicole, I sit down and like this morning, and I could not for 5 seconds let go of a thought in a situation that I was involved in earlier today. And what I do in that moment is I just send myself some kindness. And I just say to myself, it's okay, Kelly. This is what's worrying you right now. Why don't we just be with this and sit with this? And then I let myself feel my body on the chair, feet on the ground. And when I connect to my body and the sensory experience, that's why we focus on the breath so much in meditation. It brings you out of the storyline and the drama queen in your head, and it brings you back into this present moment. So there's no right or wrong, and it doesn't go well all the time, and sometimes it does, but it is the daily commitment. It's like going to the gym every day. It's the daily commitment that adds up incrementally and changes your life even within a week or two of starting a practice.
Hmm. Kelly Carlin is with us. We're talking about Unplug with Kelly Carlin, which is the webinar that the autumn cycle begins just in a few days, doesn't it?
This Sunday.
So it goes for 10 weeks. Now, how does it work? People get on their computer and you all wind up in some central
place? Yeah,
you
can either be on the computer or the phone. It works through the Zoom app. Zoom is a live meeting technology, but I use their webinar technology, and it's really, really cool because I'm in my home. I use my computer. I'm using my camera. People see me. But there's also a chat room, so anyone who's live and involved in the class can chat and say hello in the chat room. They can say hello to everybody or just me. I can ask for people to ask questions. There's a little Q&A box. People can ask questions. I can answer them. And then if there's some time left each 90-minute webinar, which there usually is, I ask if anyone wants to come on and have some live coaching. And I will bring someone on. They'll raise their hand. There's all this like little technology. It's really easy. They raise their hand, and I bring them on live. I can see their video if they have a camera and they've turned it on, or at least we can hear their audio. And we do a little live coaching, and then everyone can experience that. And it's always a great experience because usually what one person is struggling with, most people are struggling with. And it's really fun for me because I get to connect directly with people. And we get to go down another layer and really see, like, what people are struggling with, how it applies to our daily life, and the impact that, you know, this work is really having on their life.
It sounds fascinating. So how many people do you get, like, in the group?
I had 50 people over the summer.
Wow.
I'll probably end up having about 50 people over the fall. Usually there's about 20 to 30 people live. Some people don't come on live. They just wait for the recording to go up, and they do it at their own time during the week sometime. There's also public forums, not public, but forums within the class on the where I teach, Rizuku. And every week I put the journal prompts up there, and we discuss what we're grappling with. I'm very open and authentic about my own grappling with what I'm doing. I'm very human in this thing. Although I am a guide and a leader and a teacher of certain techniques, and I'm the holder of space here, I'm a human, you know, struggling with my own practice and struggling with my own stress and trying to balance all the things in my life and, you know, the emotional stuff and the career and the family and the husband and all that stuff and the politics of it all too. I don't talk politics during the 90 minutes. I really want to give people a chance to unplug from the chaos. The reason I started this in the summer was because I was feeling your anxiety, Nicole. I still am.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to give people a chance to have some tools and some ways to balance the overwhelm we're all feeling right now.
And are you able to? Are you able to grapple with, you know, to deal with the fact that we've got this madman in the White House who's tweeting at the leader of North Korea and could very easily start a nuclear war?
Yeah. So there's a couple of different voices in there. One is the one that's in panic reaction against that,
yeah,
or with that and feels terrified by it. And I absolutely own that. And then there's another part of me that is more detached and able to kind of watch it all and see it from afar, to see the river flowing by. And knowing that right now, today, Friday, September 22nd, we are safe. Nothing is happening right this moment in our particular space that we're in. Now, some people are dealing with hurricanes, and some people are dealing with earthquakes, and
yes,
some people are dealing with a lot of daily stress. But right in this moment, we are safe and we are okay. And then the other thing, too, is how am I contributing to this? How am I contributing to the panic? How am I contributing to real solutions? How am I contributing to the mental health and the general environment and atmosphere of the people and the life around me? And that's why I'm doing this course, because I know that I want to contribute in a way that is helpful and that creates an alternative to the panic that we're going through.
Well, Francie in the chat room said Kelly's Unplugged came just in time. So if people want to check it out, you can go to kellycarlin.com, click on the tab that says teaching, and all the information is there. Kelly Carlin,
And I'd like to just offer your listeners a 20% off discount that if they type in the coupon code FALL, F-A-L-L, all caps, if they're a listener of yours, they will get 20% off.
Awesome. Okay. I'll put that on the blog so they'll know. Thank you so much.
Thank
it's
you.
Great to talk with you.
Nicole, it is always such a pleasure.
For me, too. Thanks. We'll talk online. Kelly
okay,
Carlin.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye. And with that, have a great weekend, everyone. See you Tuesday.